Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling in the darkness, and the Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, we are still celebrating Black History Month, and I wanted us today to listen to a documentary. It was aired back in the 1960s. And by CBS, and it was called A Harvest of Shame, A Harvest of Shame. And you know, we today focus on immigrants out of the country, you know, the Hispanic population that is coming from Mexico and Honduras and El Salvador, coming from South America. Well, back in the 60s, you had people in America that would migrate from south to north to work at the various fields. And then they would come from north to south to work in the various fields and stuff. And I want you to hear the tough time, because we think that it's hard today on these immigrants, but it was even harder, ladies and gentlemen, on these migrants. Particularly, most of them was poor blacks and poor whites. So get close to your radio and you'll be able to distinguish the difference just in their vocabulary and their speech. So get close to your radio and listen. He said they paying today. 70 cents today. You hear him saying? They're going to pay 70 cents today. Get on the bus.
Son of box, and you guarantee you if you pull today and we pull what we got to pull today, you have $11 in your pocket.
They're going to pay him $11 today for pouring concrete.
It has nothing to do with Johannesburg or Cape Town. It is not Nyasaland or Nigeria. This is Florida. These are citizens of the United States, 1960. This is a shape-up for migrant workers. The hawkers are chanting the going peace rate at the various fields. This is the way the humans who harvest the food for the best-fed people in the world get hired.
You have hundreds and thousands of black people, and now they loading up on this truck, ladies and gentlemen. This truck problem.
One farmer looked at this and said, we used to own our slaves. Now we just rent them. The Secretary of Labor looked at the migrant plight and said,
I think they're the great mass of what I called the excluded Americans. They are people who cry out. The workers and their children and their wives who cry out for some assistance. And whose plight is a shame. It's a shame in America.
The president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, the largest farmers organization, says,
I think that most social workers would agree that it's better for a man to be employed, even if his capacity is such as to limit his income. And we take the position that it's far better to have thousands of these folks who are practically unemployable, earning some money, doing some productive work for at least a few days in a year.
This is an American story that begins in Florida and ends in New Jersey and New York State with the harvest. It is a 1960 Grapes of Wrath that begins at the Mexican border in California and ends in Oregon and Washington. It is the story of men and women and children who work 136 days of the year and average $900 a year. They travel in buses. They ride trucks. They follow the sun.
Well, I don't know. It don't look like we'll ever get ahead. I guess we'll just have to keep going till we can find something better.
A minister named Cassidy, who works with them, says,
"They are just as bad as the slave. Only on name they are not a slave, but in the way they are treated, they are worse than a slave. And somebody has to make thousands of dollars out of his sweat. Is that a slave or not?"
They are the migrants, workers in the sweatshops of the soil, the harvest of shame.
To you tonight by Philip Morris Incorporated, makers of Marlboro, filter cigarette with the unfiltered taste. Now, Edward R. Murrow.
This is CBS Reports, Harvest of Shame. It has to do with the men, women, and children who harvest the crops in this country of ours, the best-fed nation on earth. These are the forgotten people, the underprotected, the undereducated, the underclothed, the underfed. We present this report on Thanksgiving because were it not for the labor of the people you are going to meet, you might not starve, but your table would not be laden with the luxuries that we have all come to regard as essentials. We should like you to meet some of your fellow citizens who harvest the food for the best-fed nation on earth.
David Lowe talks to Mrs. Dobie, 34 years old, mother of 9 children.
Mrs. Dobie, what things do you pick up north?
We pick strawberries and cherries.
Who works with you out of this family here?
Everybody except the baby.
Who takes care of them in the field?
Well, they just kind of stay along with us or take care of themselves. The one that can't walk usually stays in the baby buggy.
What is an average dinner for the family?
Well, we just... You mean, what do we have in...
Yes.
We... Well, I cook a pot of beans and fry some potatoes or some corn or something like that.
How many quarts of milk do you buy for the children?
Well, we don't have milk except maybe when we draw our paycheck, we have milk about once a week.
For all these children, you have
the
milk?
The baby has, she is on the bottle and she uses about 15 cans of milk a week, but the older children have milk about once a week.
Do they like to drink milk, Mrs. Dobie?
Yes, they like milk.
The only reason I asked that question, I was quite shocked that they had milk only once a week.
Just thought they didn't like it, but they like milk, but it's, well, there's so many, a gallon of milk will make them a glass around, and so we just can't afford it every day.
What do you want most for your children, Mrs. Dobie?
Well, I'd like for them to have a career, whatever they want to be when they got older. Of course, the smaller ones, they've not... don't realize yet to know what they'd like to be, but the older girl, she'd like to go to school if she could. Of course, she'd probably be like the boy, have to quit as soon as she's old enough. She really likes to go to school, but she had to miss last week because she had to keep the baby for me to work.
Mrs. Dobie, wouldn't you ever care to have a house of your own?
I'd like to have a house if... We plan to buy one if we could ever get enough to pay down on one. We'd buy one.
Do you think this will ever happen?
Well, it don't seem like it.
This is Belgrade, Florida, where the Exodus has its beginning every year. The migrants call it their home, but the circus people call their winter quarters their Sarasota. Charles Goodlett, chief of police of Belgrade, says,
"The problem that we have now are the ones that come here that don't have the money to rent a room. They'll sleep around the bars, in the grass, in the packing houses, around the lake area, in the parks, any place they can find to sleep, to rest for a few hours. They come here with one thought in mind, is to survive till the end of this season and save enough money to get to the next state, going north."
From towns like this throughout Florida and throughout the South, the 2 to 3 millions move out on their annual migration, which ends in late November. They carry with them whatever little they possess, whatever little they are. At the Okeechobee labor camp, while families were preparing to move north, there was still some work in the bean fields. Children, as usual, were left to fend for themselves. Jerome, how old are you?
9.
9? Do you go to school?
Yes.
Where do you go to school, Jerome?
I did Okeechobee Elementary School.
I see. What is your sister's name?
Lois.
That's Lois. And what are your other sisters' names?
Catherine and Beulah.
Catherine and Beulah. What happened to your foot, Jerome?
Dug a nail in out there by the wash house.
So you drove a nail in out by the wash house. What did your mother do for that?
She put some alcohol on.
Where do you sleep, Jerome?
In this bed.
You have this big bed?
Yeah, sir.
What happened? How did you get that hole in that bed there, Jerome?
Rats.
The what?
Rats.
Now, Jerome, you are taking care of Kathy, of Beulah, and Lois.
Yes, sir.
Now, are you going to give them lunch today?
Yes, sir.
What are you going to feed them?
I don't know, sir.
Do you have any food here to give them?
Yes.
I see. What time does your mother come home?
I don't know, sir.
The following day, Aline King, the mother of Jerome, Kathy, Lois, and Beulah, again was picking beans.
Aileen King, I saw your children yesterday at the Okeechobee camp. Why didn't you put them in the nursery?
I don't make enough to pay for it.
How much does it cost to put them in?
85 cents.
85 cents.
That's right.
Aileen, what time did you come out the field this morning?
6 o'clock.
What time would you get home?
About 3:30, 4 o'clock.
6 this morning to 4 o'clock this afternoon.
That's right.
How much did you earn?
$1. That's right. $1.
Is that because the beans were of poor quality?
That's right.
Has this happened before?
That's right.
How much will your food cost you today?
About $2.
Aileen, how old are you?
29.
How many children do you have?
14.
How old were you when you first started working in the fields?
8.
You've been working 21 years in the field?
That's right.
Aileen, do you ever think you'll be able to get out of this kind of work?
No, sir.
All the migrants travel fourth class. If there is a privileged class, they ride in their own jalopy, in the best Jode family tradition. The long journey begins. Through Atlanta, Nashville, Indianapolis, en route to the fields and orchards of America. Lowell has been following the migrants for the past 9 months. Some are freewheelers who travel as a family unit. He met the Parsons family as they were about to leave Belgrade tomatoes for Indiana strawberries.
Mr. Parsons, do you think the farmers you work for care about your problems?
No, sir. They're not in particular worried about you. They just want their stuff out and you get away as quick as possible.
Would you say that you're welcomed when you're needed?
Well, that is the only time that you are welcome, is when they are needing you. They're friendly and everything, but once they're done with you, well, they'd rather for you to move.
Did they ever ask you to leave their places?
Oh, yeah. They tell you if you're finishing up like tomorrow, well, they had rather for you to be out and gone in about 3 days, and that way they'll cut down on their electric bills and all the other stuff.
What do you want most in this world for you and your family?
I'd like for my family to be well, stay together as much as possible. I'd like to be on a farm somewhere out away from so many people, to where they could attend one church and be interested mostly in one school, and that way I believe they'd all be better satisfied.
Mr. Parsons, do you think this will ever happen?
Not at the rate that I'm going now, no.
Most of them ride 1,500 to 2,000 miles to work in vehicles owned by crew leaders who recruit the workers for the migration north. This is the Roach family looking for work.
Mr. Roach, how did you happen to come to this place?
Well, I came to Augusta, and I was talking to some people, and they told me to came on down to Waycross, that there was lots more work around Waycross, see?
Well, how many miles have you been traveling looking for work so far?
About 1,600 and something.
Mr. Roach, where did you spend the night last night with your family?
Over in the woods. Pulled up on the side of the road, out of a little dirt road, and slept in the woods, outside the car.
May I ask you, sir, what did you have for dinner and your family last night?
Well, we had bologna sausages and loaf bread.
That isn't very good food for a growing family, is it?
Well, we made on it.
How much money do you have in the world right at this moment?
I only have about $1.45.
Well, what do you intend to do about food for your family today?
Well, I've always worked, and I always figured I could get work. I had never been where I couldn't get a little something to do.
The vegetables the migrants picked yesterday moved north swiftly on rails. Produce en route to the tables of America by a trailer is refrigerated and carefully packed to prevent bruising. Cattle carried to market by federal regulation must be watered, fed, and rested for 5 hours every 28 hours. People, men, women, and children, are carried to the fields of the north in journeys as long as 4 days and 3 nights. They often ride 10 hours without stop for food or facilities. The first stop is normally at Yulee, Florida, 1 mile from the Georgia border, a checkpoint for farm labor leaving the state.
Okay.
There are other stops, Kingsland, Georgia, for bread and sandwich meat. Darien, Georgia, for facility. A roadside stop en route in South Carolina. Miles north of Belgrade, Florida, by way of U.S. Route 17 and 301, through Jacksonville, Savannah, Charleston, Wilmington, and New Bern, is Elizabeth City, North Carolina, a bean stop, good for 6 weeks' work. This camp was home for 40 days for the families of Tom Lockett's crew, now 30 hours out of Belgrade.
Ms. Blakely, how many years have you been working in agriculture, in the fields?
Oh, practically all of my life. I haven't did no other work much but in the field all of my life. I raised all of my kids working in the field.
I noticed that there's some straw over there. What is that for?
Well, that was the straw they brought for the people to sleep on.
Well, weren't mattresses supplied here?
They used to be, but they ain't now.
Mrs. Blakely, where is the water supply over here?
That's it, right, John.
For how many people?
For this and that over here, they all use the same.
And how many bathrooms are there here?
Now.
Where do you use the bathroom? Where are the facilities?
Don't have one. We use our tin tubes.
Mrs. Brown, how did the children fare on the journey up north?
Well, they got kind of fretful, you know, when you know, got so riding, handling them. But we made it.
Miss Brown, may I ask how old you are?
I'm 37.
Mrs. Brown, how many years have you been working in the fields?
All my life.
Do you remember how old you were when you started?
I was about 8 years old.
Would you like to get out of this work?
I sure would.
Do you think you'll ever be able to?
I'm hoping so.
Do you think you'll be able to, though?
I don't know.
20 miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, the workers, driven 900 miles north by crew leader Norman Hall, picked beans at the prevailing rate of 50 cents a hamper. Lunch is not a picnic, whether brought from the labor camp or purchased at the open-air kitchen, or in a bottle heated by the rays of the sun.
In a survey in 21 states conducted by the National Council of Churches, the migrants themselves listed the evils of labor camp life. Bad housing, flies, mosquitoes, dirty beds and mattresses, unsanitary toilets, and lack of hot water for bathing. One employer of hundreds of migrant laborers was asked, "Are they happy people?"
"Well, I guess they got a little gypsy in their blood. They just like it. A lot of them wouldn't do anything else. A lot of them don't know any different. That's all they want to do. They love it. They love to go from place to place. They don't have a worry in the world. They're happier than we are. Today, they eat. Tomorrow, they don't worry about. They're the happiest race of people on earth."
Mr. Jones, do you think that the migratory laborer makes a living wage?
They make a poor living. In other words, sometimes it's just like the farmer. Sometimes when things are good, when the yields are good and they can make good money, they make a good living. But take year in and year out from different seasons, different sections of the country, I'd say no, they make a poor living.
There are days when beans are not ready for harvest, and that's one more day with no income. Ed King, a crew leader, hauled his workers to this camp at Powell's Landing, Virginia, where they worked 5 weeks pulling corn and picking beans. And when the fields have been stripped in North Carolina and Virginia, the trucks and buses again move north. This is Little Creek Ferry, outside of Norfolk. 20,000 migrants are ferried to the fertile fields of the Virginia Cape and the eastern shores of Maryland and Delaware for beans, tomatoes, asparagus, and potatoes. For one crew, hardship was climaxed by disaster, the death of a migrant.
We had a little trouble on the road about 4 o'clock this morning, Sunday morning, and our car and a little wreck, one of the Kia.
Has this ever happened before with any crews coming up north?
Once I remember, I was still in North Carolina.
What happened?
Everybody got killed.
Every year, as predictable as the seasons, there are accidents resulting in death and serious injury to these laborers. On June 6, 1957, at the intersection of U.S. Route 301 and State Highway 102, 9 miles from Fayetteville, North Carolina, 21 migrants were killed, 17 males, 3 females, and the baby boy. The police report stated one of the causes of the high loss of life was the packaging of the occupants of the truck.
Today, only 6 states have laws providing for the safe transportation of migrants within their borders. The state of North Carolina is not one of the 6.
Secretary of Labor Mitchell.
Hardly a year goes by that we don't read in the paper of some very serious accident where sometimes a dozen or more people have been killed purely because there is no interstate standard with regard to safety.
Another complication of the migrant stream is the constant flow of foreign workers into the available pool of domestic workers. Hundreds of thousands of Mexican braceros and thousands of offshore laborers from the Caribbean area, hired by contract, depress the wage scale of the domestic migrant. This controversy is most bitter on the West Coast. Joseph Woods, a Marine combat veteran of the Pacific, competes against the braceros. Lowe talked to the Woods family under a tree, which was their home in California.
Mr. Woods, how did you happen to pick this spot to camp?
Well, someone told us about it, and they said it was all right to camp here.
Where do you get your water supply?
We go to town after it.
And how do you bring it back here?
In cans. We have a 10-gallon can.
What do you use for sanitary facilities, Mr. Woods?
Well, just get by the best we can.
How many days will you have to be picking cherries in order to find enough money to move into a house, Mr.
Well, probably quite a few. They usually want a month's rent in advance, so by the time the cherries are over here, we'll be moving somewhere else anyway.
Mrs. Wood, tell me about the children. Do they go out in the orchards and work with you when you work?
Well, we have taken them out sometimes, Russ, but they're a little too small to work.
Who takes care of them here?
My father stays here and takes care of them usually.
Do you think that you'll ever make enough money picking fruit, Mr. Woods, in order to get settled down in one place and have a home of your own?
I don't think so.
Throughout the United States, there are others, like the Woods family, who are not able to enjoy the luxury of living in a labor camp. In New Jersey, a few miles from Princeton, is this labor camp.
All right, we're going to have to stop the tape right there at that point today, but we'll pick right back up tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, and it's terrible, ladies and gentlemen, this harvest of shame back in 1960. All right, thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.